ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्य, नरं चैव नरोत्तमं, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्, ततो जायमुदीरये। Tonight we're reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we'll begin with chapter number 80. The name of this chapter is The Brahmana Sudama Visits Lord Krishna in Dwarka. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna worshipped his Brahmana friend Sudama, who came to his place seeking charity, and how the two of them discussed the pastimes they had shared while living at the home of their spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. The Brahmana Sudama, a personal friend of Lord Krishna's, was completely free of material desires. He maintained himself and his wife with whatever came of its own accord, and thus they were poverty-stricken. One day, Sudama's wife, unable to find any food to prepare for her husband, went to him and asked that he visit his friend Krishna in Dwarka and beg some charity. Sudama was reluctant, but when she persisted, he agreed to go, reflecting that an opportunity to see the Lord was extremely auspicious. His wife begged a few handfuls of flattened rice as a gift for Sri Krishna, and Sudama set off for Dwarka. As Sudama approached the palace of Lord Krishna's principal wife, Rukmini Devi, the Lord saw him from a distance. Krishna immediately rose from his seat on Rukmini's bed and embraced his friend with great joy. Then he sat Sudama down on the bed, washed his feet with his own hands, and sprinkled the wash water on his head. After this, he presented him with various gifts and worshipped him with incense, lamps, and so on. Meanwhile, Rukmini fanned the shabbily dressed Brahmana with a yak-tail whisk. All of this astonished the residents of the palace. Lord Sri Krishna then took the hand of his friend, and the two of them reminisced about the things they had done together long ago, while living in the school of their spiritual master. Sudama pointed out that Krishna engages in the pastime of acquiring an education only to set an example for human society. Text number one. Are the microphones out in the audience? I didn't see them. Shri Raju Vacha Bhagavan Yani Chayani Chanyani Mukundasya Mahatmanaha Viryan yananta viryasya shrotum ichchami he prabho. King Parikshit said, "My lord, O master, I wish to hear about other valorous deeds performed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, whose valor is unlimited." Who's speaking to whom? So you can picture this in your mind's eye, that Parikshit and Shukadev are sitting together, and this is the perfect position to be in order to advance in spiritual life, is one who is qualified and eager to hear, and one who is qualified and eager to speak. And then when the two come together and there's Krishna Katha, then the speaker is purified, the hearer is purified, and everybody in between and who hears that is purified. And Srivas Pandit Prabhu is looking up a verse from the 10th canto, first chapter, which gives that very statement. Page 249 in your shloka book. And it starts Vasudeva Katha Prashna Purusham Strin Punartiha. Everyone gets a shloka book but me, I guess. To what page is it? Even a page-turning service. Srivas Prabhu, you're the best. Okay, here's the verse. You'll enjoy looking at this verse. It's on the page of top of page 249 in your shloka book if you're watching from home. Vasudeva kata prashna, please repeat.
Vasudeva kata prashna.
Purusham strin punatihi. Vaktaram pratshrakam shrotrims. Tatpada salilam yata. And here's the translation. The Ganges emanating from the toe of Lord Vishnu purifies the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Similarly, when one asks questions about the pastimes and characteristics of Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, three varieties of men are purified: the speaker or preacher, he who inquires, and the people in general who listen. And still that vibration is going on around the world, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is recorded. Actually, it's always the same. It appears that it's being re-spoken through various speakers and so forth, but the vibration, the shlokas are the same, according to Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha. And now it's, by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva, it's in written form. So that is a literary kirtan, Prabhupada called it. And that literary kirtan can be spread from town to town, house to house. And when people read that, then they can get the same effect as if they were sitting there hearing Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj asking questions. And this is known to be the topmost process for advancing in spiritual consciousness, is to seriously and sincerely hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Lord Krishna, who's within the heart of the living entity, becomes inspired to purify the heart. Actually, the one I'm thinking of, Srivas, is from the 11th canto. And it's, I'm going to have to look it up because it's in the commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. I'm going to read you all a verse right now. I've read it before in this class, but I'll bet you it'll change your life all over again just by hearing it. What do you think? Should I read it or not? Change your life in a good way, that is. And what it is it's in a commentary, and it's in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, and the second verse, and the second verse says that anyone who hears the Bhagavatam attracts Krishna. What I need is $11,255, please. Actually, I don't need it. I got right here. I might as well use the electronic device, eh? I'll read it to you. Which I don't like to do because I don't want to encourage people not to buy the books. $11,255. This is the last verse in chapter 2 of the 11th canto. You ready? Okay, Bhakti Natalie's ready. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the conditioned souls that if they call upon him by speaking his holy name, even unintentionally or unwillingly, the Lord is inclined to destroy innumerable sinful reactions in their hearts. Therefore, when a devotee who has taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet chants the holy name of Krishna with genuine love, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never give up the heart of such a devotee. One who has thus captured the Supreme Lord within his heart is to be known as Bhagavat Pradhan, the most exalted devotee of the Lord. And this is quoted by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to, you like this, don't you? He's in ecstasy. Into the second verse in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam. And it goes along with the statement that When one hears the Bhagavatam, then Krishna becomes locked within the heart of the devotee. He won't leave. Because it's the most attractive sound vibration for Krishna also, because it's about his loving devotees, his relationship with his intimate loving devotees. So by hearing that vibration recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one attracts Krishna to stay within the heart. What to speak of then chanting the holy name of the Lord with feeling. And even if you chant unintentionally, the Lord becomes attracted. What are the implications of that? We have something so powerful, some medicine that if you distribute it, people don't even know they're taking it. They're eternally benefited from it. Like when we go out to chant Hare Krishna and people just hear the mantra, and even if they try to avoid hearing it, there's an indelible, eternal, beneficial effect that will come out. Yes, Srivas Pandit Prabhu? Page 201 is the same verse. Well, that's good news. I had no idea it was in the shloka book. Really? Page 201. Which verse are you referring to? Shinvata Shraddhaya Nityam Granat. Go ahead. Granatascha Swacheshtitam Kalina Natidhir Gena Bhagavan Vishate Hridi. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have this personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. So congratulations to all of you who are here, especially you, Vrinda, taking time off from your homework or whatever to come here and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. We need more kids like you in the world. Okay, continuing in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm on text number 2. O Brahmana, how could anyone who knows the essence of life and is disgusted with endeavoring for sense gratification give up the transcendental topics of Lord Uttama Shloka after hearing them repeatedly? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments herein that we see many persons who, even after hearing the topics of the Lord repeatedly, give up their spiritual dedication. The Acharya replies that the word visheshajna is therefore significant here. Those who have actually understood the essence of life do not give up Krishna consciousness. A further qualification is to be vishanna kama marganahi, disgusted with material sense gratification. These two qualities are compulsory. These two qualities are complementary. One who has experienced the real taste of Krishna consciousness automatically becomes disgusted with the inferior taste of material pleasure. Such a genuine hearer of the topics of Krishna cannot give up hearing about the Lord's fascinating pastimes. And so, who knows a verse from the Bhagavad Gita besides Srivas Pandit, Sundar Nanda, and anybody else who's studying carefully recently, that talks about the higher taste one attains from performing devotional service, and what is the effect of that higher taste? All right, everybody's eligible. Sundar, go ahead. Just use the microphone and sing it like it was you were on the bank of the Ganges speaking to the assembly of great sages.
Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarsham rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. So, I don't know, just paraphrasing it, Prabhu, that one who has actually experienced the higher taste will be able to give up the lower taste.
Natural, right? So this is the system for advancing in spiritual life, is to get a higher taste, because then there's no more restraint as far as controlling one's lower nature. One naturally gravitates towards what one prefers. If you prefer something and it's obviously better, you just take it. It's our nature to take the better thing. So, this is mentioned here. And also, being disgusted with material sense gratification. There's a way in which there's an accumulation of intuitive knowledge that the material world is a disappointing place. And there's a way in which a person after many lifetimes in the material world comes to understand that engaging in sense gratification is futile, and he becomes disgusted with it. So this is mentioned as a qualification for devotional service, that one has somewhat of a healthy disdain for material sense gratification. And what is the other qualification? It is visheshagya. He knows the essence of life. One knows what the purpose of human life is and doesn't simply squander it. So it's important. He's asking a question here in this verse. O Brahmana, how could anyone who knows the essence of life and is disgusted with endeavoring for sense gratification give up the transcendental topics of the Lord Uttama Shloka after hearing them repeatedly? So if someone does give them up, it means that they were not sufficiently advanced to this position to be disgusted with material nature and to know the essence of life perfectly. One will come to know the essence of life and be disgusted with material sense gratification by continuing to chant Hare Krishna and to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we'll do right now. Text number 3. Savagya yatasya gunan grinite karau cha tat karma karo manascha smirat vasantam stira jangameshu shrinoti tat punya kata smakarna. Actual speech is that which describes the qualities of the Lord. Real hands are those that work for him. A true mind is that which always remembers him, dwelling within everything, moving and non-moving. And actual ears are those that listen to sanctifying topics about him. Purport. While continuing from the previous verse to glorify the sense of hearing dedicated to the Lord, King Parikshit mentions the other senses also, so that we gain a complete picture of Krishna consciousness. Here he declares that without any connection to Krishna, the Supreme Lord, all the organs of the body become useless. A similar statement is made by Shonaka Rishi in the Srimad, in the second canto, third chapter, verses 20 through 24. Can I have those? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that the senses should work together in Krishna consciousness. In other words, whatever the eyes or the ears experience, the mind should simply remember Krishna, who is within all things. And now we'll hear from the second canto, third chapter, verses 20 through 24. It's referred to herein. How's everybody so far? We're just getting started. But we're hearing Krishna Katha, so we're in the right place. Everything's okay. Not to worry. Okay, here we go. Here's some famous verses. I'm going to read Prabhupada's purport here also. Bile batoru krama vikramanye nashrinvata karna pute narasya jivasati dar durikevasuta nachopagayant urugaya gata. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. Purport. Devotional service to the Lord is rendered by all limbs or parts of the body. It is the transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. Therefore, a devotee is engaged 100% in the service of the Lord. One can engage in devotional service when the senses of the body are purified in relation with the Lord, and one can render service to the Lord with the help of all the senses. Can I have Ragini, please? As such, the senses and the action of the senses are to be considered impure or materialistic as long as they are employed only in sense gratification. The purified senses are engaged not in sense gratification but in the service of the Lord in toto. The Lord is the supreme with all senses, and the servitor, who is part and parcel of the Lord, also has the same senses. Service to the Lord is the completely purified use of the senses, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord imparted instruction with full senses, and Arjuna received them with full senses. And thus there was a perfect exchange of sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple. Spiritual understanding is nothing like an electrical charge from the master to the disciple, as foolishly claimed by such propaganda mongers. Everything is full of sense and logic, and the exchange of views between the master and the disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. Make a note of that. The reception has to be submissive and real. We'll come back to it, maybe. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that one should receive the teachings of Lord Chaitanya with intellect and full senses so that one can logically understand the great mission. In the impure state, a living being, the various senses, in the impure state of a living being, the various senses are fully engaged in mundane affairs. If the ear is not engaged in the service of the Lord by hearing about him from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, certainly the holes of the ear will be filled with some rubbish. Therefore, the messages of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam should be preached all over the world very loudly. That is the duty of a pure devotee who has actually heard about them from perfect sources. Many want to speak something to others, but because they are not trained to speak on the subject matter of Vedic wisdom, they are all speaking nonsense, and people are receiving them with no sense. There are hundreds of thousands of sources for distributing mundane news of the world, and people of the world are also receiving it. Similarly, the people of the world should be taught to hear the transcendental topics of the Lord, and the devotee of the Lord must speak loudly so that they can hear. The frogs loudly croak, with the result that they invite the snakes to eat them. The human tongue is especially given for chanting the Vedic hymns and not for croaking like frogs. The word asati used in this verse is also significant. Asati means a woman who has become a prostitute. A prostitute has no reputation for good womanly qualities. Similarly, the tongue, which is given to the human being for chanting the Vedic hymns, will be considered a prostitute when engaged in chanting some mundane nonsense. Text 21. The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead, Hari. 22. The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead Vishnu, his forms, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body, and the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. So, thank you very much. So, again, I'll read the reference point that we took off from this purport. Here he declares that without any connection to Krishna, the Supreme Person, the Supreme Lord, all the organs of the body become useless. A similar statement is made by Shaunaka Rishi in the second canto. Nice reference point, isn't it? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the senses should work together in Krishna consciousness. In other words, whatever the eyes or the ears experience, the mind should simply remember Krishna, who is within all things. So devotional service is very practical at the same time. Most of you have heard how Jayananda Prabhu in the old days used to build the Rathyatra carts, and then people would walk by and say, "What are you doing?" He'd say, "Here, come over here, help me for a second. Hold this." And then, you know, 2 days later, they'd still be there working a cart. And like, what are we building? And like, this is for Lord Jagannath. And pretty soon they'd be dancing in the kirtan and so forth. So one who sweeps the floor for the temple and cooks the Lord's offerings, all these ways of engaging the senses in the service of the Lord purify the senses and remind one of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, the mind, the senses, they become contaminated by engagement in activities for sense gratification. So, the next verse is, text 4, an actual head is one that bows down to the Lord in his manifestations among the moving and non-moving creatures. Real eyes are those that see only the Lord, and actual limbs are those which regularly honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or those of his devotees. Text 5. Suta Goswami said, thus questioned by King Vishnurata, the powerful sage Bhadarayani replied, his heart fully absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudev. Srivas Prabhu.
In the previous verse, it is said that one should honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or his devotees' feet. How do we honor? By putting it on the head, or should we drink it? Or
both.
Okay.
You'll notice in the story coming up that, welcome, that Lord Krishna greets Sudama Brahman and he washes his feet and then he sprinkles the water on his head and so forth. But also, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also in the Padatis that one should drink that water, Charnamrita. In fact, in most temples, there's a bowl when you walk in to the temple, and you can take a few drops. This is the water which has washed the Lord's lotus feet, so forth. There's a story about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who went to a debate on behalf of his father, because his father was too ill to attend. So he was young at the time, but he was still a formidable debater and scholar. And he defeated so soundly the opposition that the crowd became anxious to come and touch his feet. And it was dangerous because there was a swell in the crowd. And, you know, in India, you get in these crushing situations when everyone's enthusiastically trying to, you know, get a little tiny bit of mercy. And so one very astute person picked up Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and dipped his lotus feet in a barrel of water and then distributed the water to everybody by throwing and it pacified the crowd. So you'll know to do that if anything like that ever happens. Here we go. Are you ready? Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmana friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all sense enjoyment. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful and his senses subdued. Living as a householder, he maintained himself with whatever came of its own accord. The wife of that poorly dressed Brahmana suffered along with him and was emaciated from hunger. Purport, Sudama's chaste wife was also poorly dressed, and whatever food she obtained, she gave to her husband. Thus she remained fatigued from hunger. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmana once approached him. Her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. Purport, according to Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Further, she was fearful to approach her husband because she knew that he did not want to beg for anything other than devotion to the Supreme Lord. Text number 9. Sudama's wife said, O Brahmana, isn't it true that the husband of the goddess of fortune is the personal friend of your exalted self? That greatest of Yadavas, the Supreme Lord Krishna, is compassionate to Brahmanas and very willing to grant them his shelter. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary how the Brahmana's wife anticipated every possible objection her husband might make to her request that he go to Lord Krishna to beg for charity. If the Brahmana might say, How could the husband of the goddess of fortune befriend a fallen soul like myself? She replies by saying that Lord Krishna is Brahmanya, very favorably disposed toward the Brahmanas. If Sudama might claim to have no real devotion for the Lord, she replies by saying that he is a great and wise personality who would surely obtain the shelter and mercy of the Lord. If the Brahmana might object that Lord Krishna is equally disposed to all the countless unhappy conditioned souls suffering the fruits of their own karma, she replies that Lord Krishna is especially the Lord of the devotees. And thus, even if he himself did not grant Sudama his mercy, certainly the devotees engaged in serving the Lord would mercifully give him some charity. Since the Lord protects the sattvatas, the members of the Yadu dynasty, what difficulty would there be for him to protect a humble Brahmana like Sudama? And what fault would there be in his doing so? Text 10. O fortunate one, please approach him, the real shelter of all saints. He will certainly give abundant wealth to such a suffering householder as you. Lord Krishna is now the ruler of the Bhojas, Rishnis, and Antakas, and is staying at Dwarka. Since he gives even his own self to anyone who simply remembers his lotus feet, what doubt is there that he, the spiritual master of the universe, will bestow upon his sincere worshiper prosperity and material enjoyment, which are not even very desirable? What happened to Ragini? Maybe it's stuck in the wall still. Where did I leave off?
You just completed the translation.
For number 11?
Yeah.
Okay. Purport. The Brahmana's wife here implies that since Lord Krishna is the ruler of the Bhojas, Rishnis, and Andakas, if these opulent rulers merely acknowledged Sudama as a personal friend of Krishna's, they could give him everything he required. In this connection, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that since Lord Krishna had at this point put aside his weapons, he no longer traveled outside his own capital of Dwarka. Thus Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Brahmana's wife said, I have heard that he never leaves his capital city, Dwarka. He is living there without outside engagements. As mentioned here, material wealth and sense gratification are not very desirable. The reason for this is that in the long run, they give no real satisfaction. Still, Sudama's wife thought, even if Sudama went to Dwarka and simply remained silent before the Lord, he would certainly give him abundant wealth, as well as shelter at his lotus feet, which was Sudama's real objective. What did I say to remember that we come back to? Yeah. Well, that was way back there, huh?
Yeah. I was in third word.
Really? Boy, time sure moves past, doesn't it? Well, we lost it. I said maybe we'd come back. That was truthful. Okay, text 12 to 13. Shukadev Goswami continued, when his wife thus repeatedly implored him in various ways, the Brahmana thought to himself, to see Lord Krishna is indeed the greatest achievement in life. Thus he decided to go. But first he told her, my good wife, if there is anything in the house I can bring as a gift, please give it to me. Purport, Sudama was naturally humble, and thus, although at first he was dissatisfied with his wife's proposal, finally he settled his mind and decided to go. Now the last detail was that he had to take a gift for his friend. 14. Sudama's wife begged 4 handfuls of flat rice from neighboring brahmanas, tied up the rice in a torn piece of cloth, and gave it to her husband as a present for Lord Krishna. Taking the flat rice, the saintly Brahmana set off for Dwarka, all the while wondering, how will I be able to have Krishna's audience? Purport, among other things, Sudama assumed that the gatekeepers would stop him. Translation. The learned Brahmana, joined by some local Brahmanas, passed three guard stations and went through three gateways, and then he walked by the homes of Lord Krishna's faithful devotees, the Andakas and Vrishnis, which ordinarily no one could do. He then entered one of the opulent palaces belonging to Lord Hari's 16,000 queens, and when he did so, he felt as if he were attaining the bliss of liberation. Purport. When the saintly Brahman entered the precincts of Lord Krishna's palaces and then actually entered one of the palaces, he completely forgot everything else. And thus his state of mind is compared to that of one who has just achieved the bliss of spiritual liberation. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti quotes from the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda, wherein we learn that the Brahmana actually entered the palace of Rukmini. Satu Rukmin Yata Yanta Pura Dwari Shanam Tushnim Stitaha. He stood for a moment in silence at the doorway at Queen Rukmini's palace. 18. At that time, Lord Achyuta was seated on his consort's bed. Spotting the Brahmana at some distance, the Lord immediately stood up, went forward to meet him, and with great pleasure embraced him. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord felt intense ecstasy upon touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmana, and thus he shed tears of love. Lord Krishna seated his friend Sudama upon the bed. Then the Lord, who purifies the whole world, personally offered him various tokens of respect and washed his feet. O King, after which he sprinkled the water on his own head. He anointed him with divinely fragrant sandalwood, aguru, and kumkum paste, and happily worshipped him with aromatics, incense, and arrays of lamps. And finally, offering him betel nut and the gift of a cow, he welcomed him with pleasing words. 23. By fanning him with her chamara, the divine goddess of fortune personally served that poor Brahmana, whose clothing was torn and dirty, and who was so thin that veins were visible all over his body. The people in the royal palace were astonished to see Krishna, the Lord of spotless glory, so lovingly honor this shabbily dressed Brahmana. The residents of the palace said, "What pious acts has this unkempt, impoverished Brahmana performed? People regard him as lowly and contemptible. Yet the spiritual master of the three worlds, the abode of Goddess Shri, is serving him reverently." Leaving the goddess of fortune sitting on her bed, the Lord has embraced this Brahmana as if he were an older brother. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Taking each other's hands, O King, Krishna and Sudama talked pleasantly about how they once lived together in the school of their guru." The Supreme Lord said, "My dear Brahmana, you know well the ways of Dharma. After you offered the gift of remuneration to our guru and returned home from his school, did you marry a compatible wife or not?" Purport. Among civilized human beings, the question of ashram or spiritual order is significant. In other words, every human being must execute prescribed duties as a celibate student, a married man or woman, a retired person, or a renunciate. Since Lord Krishna could see that the Brahmana was poorly dressed, he inquired if his friend had been properly married and was executing the duties of household life. Since he was not dressed as a renunciate, he would be without a suitable ashram unless he were properly married. Text 29. Even though you are mostly involved in household affairs, your mind is not affected by material desires. Nor, O learned one, do you take much pleasure in the pursuit of material wealth. This I am well aware of. Purport. Lord Krishna here reveals that, in fact, he was well aware of his friend's situation. Sudama was actually learned and spiritually advanced, and therefore he was not interested in ordinary sense gratification, as is the common man. 30. Having renounced all material propensities which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by mundane desires. They act, as I do, to instruct the general populace. My dear Brahmana, Do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice-born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life which lies beyond all ignorance. 32. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him as a twice-born brahmana and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all the spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is as good as my own self. 33. Certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence best understand their own true welfare. Purport. One's father is a natural object of reverence, as is a religious leader who initiates one into sacred ceremonies and instructs one in general wisdom. But ultimately, the bona fide spiritual master, learned in transcendental science, and thus able to take one across the ocean of birth and death to the spiritual world, such a guru is most deserving of worship and respect, for he is the direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated here. Text 34. I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline, as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. Purport. The word prajati here indicates either begetting good children or the second birth obtained by ritual initiation into Vedic culture. Although both of these are praiseworthy, Lord Krishna here states that faithful service rendered to a bona fide spiritual master is still higher. I'm going to read you a purport that will change your life. Yes? Oh. Thank you very much. We would have been here all night looking for it, huh? Great. We'll come back to it. Thank you for finding that. So, regarding this statement by Krishna, which is profound, isn't it? Yes. And could somebody echo it back, what Krishna just said, a summary of what he just said in the last two verses? Here, I'll read it again. Oh, you got it.
He said the service to the spiritual master is the highest service, very pleasing.
Yeah, nice. Oops, I got so many books up here, and we look at the wrong one. I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. Now I'm going to read you a purport that relates to that and which will change your life forever in a positive way so you can stay. Are you ready?
Yes.
This is from 4th Canto, chapter 28. The chapter is called Paranjana Becomes a Woman in the Next Life. And the text number is 51. Tatra purvatara kaschit sakabramana atmavan santvayan valguna samna tamaha rudatim prabho. This is a very touching verse because it's actually mentioning how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always with us. He never leaves us. He's our best friend. And that, anyway, I'll read the verse. You'll see for yourself. My dear king, one brahmana who was an old friend of King Paranjana, came to that place and began to pacify the queen with sweet words. This is after her husband had died. Purport, the appearance of an old friend in the form of a brahmana is very significant. In his Paramatma feature, Krishna is the old friend of everyone. According to Vedic injunction, Krishna is sitting with the living entity side by side. According to the Shruti mantra, Dvasuparna Sayuja Sakayaha. The Lord is sitting within the heart of every living entity as Sukrit, the best friend. The Lord is always eager to have the living entity come home back to Godhead. Sitting with the living entity as witness, the Lord gives him all chances to enjoy himself materially. But whenever there is an opportunity, the Lord gives good counsel and advises the living entity to abandon trying to become happy through material adjustment and instead turn his face toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. When one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained before, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instruction of the spiritual master. This is technically called Vani Seva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse Vyavasayatmika Budhir, Ekeha Kurunandana, 241, that one should serve the words of the spiritual master. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, appeared before the queen as a brahmana, but why didn't he appear in his original form as Sri Krishna? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see him as he is. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Hare Krishna. Srila Bilvamangal Thakur has therefore said, Bhakti stvayi stirataya bhagavan yadi sya daivinana palati divya kishori murtihi. Mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmarta kama gataya samaya pratikshaha. If I am engaged in devotional service unto you, my dear Lord, then very easily can I perceive your presence everywhere. And as far as liberation is concerned, I think that liberation stands at my door with folded hands, waiting to serve me. And all material conveniences of dharma, religiosity, artha, economic development, and kama, sense gratification, stand with her. Krishna Karnamrita 107. If one is very highly advanced in devotional service, he will have no difficulty in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one engages in the service of the spiritual master, he not only sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but attains liberation. As far as material conveniences are concerned, they automatically come. Just as the maidservants of a queen follow the queen wherever she goes. Liberation is no problem for the pure devotee, and all material conveniences are simply awaiting him at all stages of life. Okay, discussion. Let's hear some discussion. We'll have some discussion.
That means just what struck you about the verse and purport. What other points?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I really like the fact where the emphasis is made on service to the Supreme, to the spiritual master, where it says that that if you serve your spiritual master, you are actually associating with Krishna in Vapu as well as Vani. So I really like that part.
Yes, nice point. What else?
In the purport, it said that Srila Prabhupada said that if one adheres to the mission of the spiritual master, then that is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was very striking.
That's very practical, isn't it? It adheres to the mission. And, you know, in the Nectar of Instruction, when Prabhupada speaks about an advanced devotee, says, you know, the advanced devotee is thinking about how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. When Prabhupada was asked about succession, about, you know, who would be guru, Prabhupada mentioned that one who understands the mission of Lord Chaitanya, one who understands the mission of his spiritual master, he can become guru, so forth. So there's so much in Prabhupada's presentation about, and then if very, you know, this contrast, Prabhupada said, not that one looks for Krishna in the bush in Vrindavan at the same time engaging in sense gratification. The very practical application that one uses in one's life to follow the order of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada's, the orders that he got from his spiritual master were very specific. I mean, he talked about preaching in the West, and that order came when Prabhupada first met his spiritual master, when Prabhupada was just a young man. And, you know, no sooner had he sat down before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the Thakur begin to urge him to preach Krishna consciousness in the Western world. And he just met him 30 seconds before. He said, you're educated, you're young, you should do this. It's based on Lord Chaitanya's desire that everyone should take up the mission and spread it all over the world. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, seeing the world as in need, people of the world in need of getting Krishna consciousness movement, he saw everything as engageable in the service of the Lord and so forth. And so Prabhupada then later on... It's all transcendental, wherever you turn. Devotees are just full of nectar. How come you're sitting way back there? How can we have a class without Mukhar Vin sitting in the front row? Then later on in Radhakund, just a short time, weeks before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta left the planet, Prabhupada was able to talk to him and asked him about, you know, what should I do? And he reiterated that he should print books. And he said, if you ever get money, print books and so forth. So Prabhupada took those instructions, you can see literally, and as all important. And he applied himself to that. And it may not be so clear how to apply oneself at first. And you can see from Prabhupada's life that in dire circumstances, he tried to apply the order. Dire means, at the time he started printing the Bhakti Guided magazine, he did it all himself. He didn't have anybody to help him. And in fact, he had practically no money. He had to go from Vrindavan, he had to go into Delhi and other places to raise money. And it was hard to get paper even. There was a ration on paper. India is not like it used to be, for all you youngsters out there, let me tell you. Back in when we started going to India in the 70s, it was really austere. You couldn't get, they had no bottled water or anything back then. It was difficult to get around. And I mean, this is how, going into India, bring a tape recorder, you know. We used to have those back in the old days, kids. These tape recorders where you actually put a tape in. Sometimes even the first ones were reel to reel. And going across the border, they would actually find the serial number and write it in your passport. Because if you didn't bring it back out of the country, then you were in big trouble. I'm just thinking back to what it was like at the time Prabhupada was trying to get things done in India. But he's printing the Back to Godhead magazine all by himself because his spiritual master told him to preach in English, print books, and that's exactly what he did. And then he wrote The Easy Journey to Other Planets. he wrote Light of the Bhagavat, and they started writing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he painstakingly had printed and then brought over to the United States and so forth. And he focused on this, and he told us to focus on the order of the spiritual master, that he would give us, just take this as your life and soul and so forth. And you can see that if a devotee firmly takes that order and execute it throughout his or her life, it can be a simple thing, even a simple order just to do one very specific thing, that devotee will be pulled back home, back to Godhead. All good things will come from that. In another section of the Bhagavatam, the second canto, I've quoted many times, that Prabhupada has said and written in a purport, that the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of his internal potency, and it is by that potency that one can come to see the Lord face to face, that one comes to see the Lord face to face. So this is a very practical thing, and Lord Krishna is saying it in this to Sadama Brahman, that this adherence to the order of the spiritual master is of the utmost importance for advancing in spiritual life. And it's very practical too. Just coming from the meetings in Houston, I was there for 6 days at the meetings of the devotees, the GBC meeting and then the temple president's meeting. So seeing both sides, everyone, how they're working together to try to fulfill the orders of Srila Prabhupada and so forth. And a lot of practical matters. You can imagine in management and managing affairs in North America, there are so many considerations one must make. And as soon as one plants a garden, of course, it's attacked. So there's so many things that one must take into consideration. And it's the devotees, I watch them as they're performing their duties at the managerial level, and it's a 24-hour service. One's absorbed in it 24 hours a day. And at the same time, I notice that they're becoming very advanced. Yes, Ramananda.
I have a question regarding the Srila Prabhupada's, regarding the his guru's order from his spiritual master, which is if you ever get money, print books. And then Srila Prabhupada implemented it, and the whole ISKCON organization was built on that concept. And we are all followers of Srila Prabhupada. Should we also inherit that command, that if we ever get many print books in general?
Yeah, we can see from Prabhupada's example how he administered that. So one thing is, book distribution is preaching. It's meant to bring people to Krishna consciousness. And then you have to manage the results of your preaching. You can't just, distribute it and then somebody becomes Krishna conscious, say, what do I do now? It's like, I don't have time, I got to go distribute another book. There has to be a way in which people are taken care of, and so we manage the results. So even in Prabhupada's own book trust, which was his heart, he said, and it was the heart of ISKCON, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, he said that he mandated that 50% of the profit would go for printing more books and 50% would go for building ISKCON projects, which it did in his time. You can see the allotments he gave all over the world. Various temples were built on this BBT money. And so, Prabhupada did both things. It's a holistic project. And so, yes, the spirit of preaching and of book distribution, if you ever get money, print books, must be there, but we have to see also that the results of what comes from doing that must also be taken into consideration. And, devotees have to be taken care of. And there has to be training of people who teach the books when people come. They have to learn them. And there has to be a place where people can come and worship. After all, what does it say in the books? Lord Kapiladev talks about how those who see my smiling face, they become imperceptibly liberated if they just walk in the temple. So we have to have a temple for people to walk in. I mean, we have to see what the books are saying. I mean, so, yes, holistically. But, preaching is the essence. If we get too much into management and think we'll manage our way into advancement, of the Krishna consciousness movement, it becomes dry, actually. It becomes dry. I notice this in these meetings that I go to, that there's a lot of administrative kind of things that are necessary. But when the topic about preaching, book distribution, goals for expanding these things comes up, everyone becomes enlivened. It's what really everyone lives for, but then it has to be managed as well. Does that satisfy you? Okay, good. Yes?
It's kind of coming up again,
okay.
Which is, how do you identify or find a spiritual master? I know that some people have said that you follow Prabhupada's writings and you learn from those, but there's also people that are in ISKCON and so on like that, and different people that could help somebody. In other words, who do you serve?
Well, I think you said it in your question, that can help somebody. Generally, when you get help from somebody, you'll have an aha moment that, wow, this person helped me. There's a genuine feeling that I'm changed, that I'm really getting sustenance here. And it's natural. It's a natural thing. If you're hearing from somebody and then you get this feeling that, wow, this is sustaining me. I'm coming to a higher level. So then one becomes attached to that kind of sangha, that association. And then Prabhupada's godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, once said that the guru or the preacher captures the student by shiksha, by instruction. And then the disciple, the listener, the follower, captures the spiritual master by diksha. Meaning that there's this relationship. Someone begins to go around and preach. And then people come and they sit down and listen. I see this all over the place. People are coming and listening to somebody, some person who's actually fixed in Krishna consciousness. And then they say, aha, I found Krishna consciousness. This is the place where I can really take shelter. And so they're coming. So then that preacher captures them. They can't go away. And then they come up to him and they say, we want initiation. And he said, go find somebody else. And they say, no, it's only you. And then he's captured. So in this way, they capture each other. So it's a natural kind of it grows into that. And Prabhupada mentions in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there's a way in which that the Shiksha Guru later on usually becomes the Diksha Guru because of that. And that one, just for ecclesiastical or for social conformity, one shouldn't accept, a particular guru or this or that. But it should come from a natural inspiration that grows from within the heart, usually through hearing. And does that help?
I guess the other part of the question would be, when it comes to being initiated, is there a certain level of person or a certain type of person that can initiate someone? What are the qualifications for someone to be able to initiate a disciple?
The qualifications are that the person knows the science of Krishna consciousness and is fully in control of his or her senses. As mentioned by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Instruction, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jihva Vegam, Udarapasta Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yovishahita Tira, Sarvamapi Mampriti Vimsa Shishyat. So what he's mentioning that there are all these urges of the senses, and that a person who can control all these urges and go on, in Krishna consciousness, not disturbed by these things, is Tira, becomes eligible to take disciples all over the world. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says, Kiba Bripra Kipanyasi Shudra Kenanoi, Ye Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hoy. It doesn't matter what background one's from. One can be from a low background, but if one knows the science of Krishna, then one can initiate. So then Prabhupada, in his purport to that verse, describes how sometimes people say, well, that means you can only be a Shiksha guru. But he said, no, Shiksha, Diksha, Vartmata, but there are all these, one who knows the science of Krishna can control the senses, can give Shiksha, can give Diksha, all these things. So one should be careful to find somebody who's fully situated in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Instruction in the fifth verse that one who is steadily chanting Hare Krishna, full control of the senses, and who's a preacher, who's preaching Krishna consciousness all the world and has no other business. This is the other thing. Person doesn't have any other business in this world except Krishna consciousness and no other motive except for to give Krishna consciousness. Does that help? Yes. Nice questions. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, I'm going to go on with the story then. I'm on text number 35 and 36. O Brahmana, Krishna speaking, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Once our guru's wife sent us to fetch firewood, and after we entered the vast forest, O twice-born one, an unseasonal storm arose with fierce wind and rain and harsh thunder. Purport, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that this storm arose during the winter and was therefore unseasonable. Then, as the sun set, the forest was covered by darkness in every direction, and with all the flooding, we could not distinguish high land from low. Constantly besieged by the powerful wind and rain, we lost our way amidst the flooding waters. We simply held each other's hands and in great distress wandered aimlessly through about the forest. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that the verb paribhabrima may be understood to be the prefix pari with either the verb bra or brahm. In the case of brahm, it indicates that Krishna and Sudama wandered all about, and in the case of bra, which means to carry, it indicates that as the two young boys wandered about, they continued to carry the firewood they had secured for their spiritual master. 539. Our guru Sandipani, understanding our predicament, set out after sunrise to search for us, his disciples, and found us in distress. Sandipani said, O my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you are completely you'd completely disregarded your own comfort. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. Purport. One engages one's body to realize one's purposes. The body is also the basis of the material conception of I, while one's fortune is the basis of the conception of mine. Thus, by offering everything to the spiritual master, one realizes oneself to be an eternal servant of the Lord. The spiritual master does not exploit the disciple, but rather engages him fully in Krishna consciousness for the disciple's eternal benefit. 42. You boys are first-class brahmanas, and I am satisfied with you. May all your desires be fulfilled, and may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you, in this world or in the next. Purport. Cooked food left sitting for 3 hours is called yata-yama, indicating that it has lost its taste. And similarly, if a devotee does not remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental knowledge that once inspired him on the spiritual path will lose its taste or meaning for him. Thus, Sandipani Muni blesses his disciples that the Vedic mantras, which reveal the absolute truth, will never lose their meaning for them, but will remain ever fresh in their minds. Discussion. This is a good point to discuss. Yata yama. And he said, you'll be ayata yama, which this yata yama means tasteless food. It's been left out, becomes stale. It doesn't have any taste anymore. So there's a way in which if someone's takes to Krishna consciousness enthusiastically, but then is neglectful of following the process. And that can happen a little bit at a time, because Maya generally chips away and says, you can let up a little bit here, a little bit there. And this happens if one develops an entitlement mentality and thinks, I've done so much, or I've achieved a certain position, therefore I can let up on this or I can let up on that. And then slowly one becomes weakened. One should always think oneself a beginner and a fool in front of one's spiritual master, and should never consider oneself entitled to anything, and should consider oneself to be helpless and at risk of being swept away by Maya at any moment. And in that mentality, one may enjoy enthusiastically pursuing the process of the basics in Krishna consciousness every day. I was just talking to a friend of mine who lives in Florida, and we were talking about his morning program. And just so nice to hear. He gets up in the morning and he has a combination of books that he reads every day. First canto of Bhagavatam, certain shlokas he reads, and then he reads from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and some Bhagavad Gita. And he's been doing it for years, and he sticks to these shlokas, and they're in him, and it's his sustenance. And similarly, chanting Hare Krishna in the morning, this taking very serious this japa. We had the japa workshop last week, but there's nothing as fulfilling as starting over every day, considering oneself a beginner, and then endeavoring to please the Lord by chanting his name with concentration, trying to catch the free nectar that's floating through the air in the early morning hours, even one drop of which can sustain one, Krishna consciousness. So if one becomes neglectful one way or the other, and we've seen over the years that in so many ways somebody can become neglectful and develop mentality that I don't need to do this or that, then one can suddenly forget why one came to Krishna consciousness. And sometimes people, and usually people come back after 20 years. 20 years of being completely gone and forgetting everything, and then they come back and they remember everything. They say, what a waste of time for 20 years. But that can happen. I just met a godbrother who's a very exalted soul, actually. And, we were talking about it, and he was a prolific, preacher and bhajaneer and so many things, and then, he was just gone for 20 years, and then he came back recently. Everyone was really happy for it, and I was talking to him, and he was just saying how, Maya's very strong, and I fell in Maya, and now he's happy to be back and realizes what happened and so forth. So we should be careful and make sure that we keep our purpose strong. Just look at how he says this again. That if a devotee does not remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental knowledge that once inspired him on the spiritual path will lose its taste or meaning. Yeah, that's dangerous, because then you think something else looks better, that there's something else besides Krishna consciousness. So hang on to the taste. Try to get it as much as you can, and always stay fixed in the and safe by practicing the fundamentals of Krishna consciousness every day, as if you were just a beginner, and that you depended on every mantra for sustenance. What do you think of that? Bhakti Natalie, yes.
Actually, before you said beginner, I was reminded of in meditation, they often use the term beginner's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was thinking about when you were speaking. And, when you've been doing something for a long time, you think, oh, I already know that. So you're not open to hearing even a talk of hearing, oh, I already know that topic. And so you think, I won't go to that, I won't go to the temple that day because I already know that topic. Or I already know those shlokas, but they're so deep that you could hear it you could be in a different frame of mind and you hear that shloka, and that could be the one that turns everything around. So it's always, you know, I always remind myself, I've been thinking, even coming here, I am a beginner, but I've had, you know, certain experiences as well, but I keep reminding myself that I'm, you know, to keep a beginner's mind. And
well put. Thank you very much. It's very important. Yes, that the one should never think that, oh, it's just Bhagavad Gita, I don't want to hear that. You know, I already know that. This is a sure sign that one has become somehow disjointed from, you know, the actual practice of Krishna consciousness. As a matter of fact, those who are advanced relish even more deeply hearing the topics, you're not your body and so forth. They become infinitely more interesting, and there's no bottom. Their depth is unfathomable. Sundar Nanaprabhu. And then,
yeah, I just wanted to add one point that every day is a new beginning, because you have said many times that whatever person you were in the night, you're not the same person when you get up the next day. So I think it had like a reset button, and then it resets, and you have to do it properly on the day for things to go smoothly on a particular day.
Thank you. Nice point.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Three short comments. We were reading the purport, the thing that came to my mind were, first thing is the KISS principle, which is keep it simple and straight, or strict and simple, or simple and straightforward, that one. The second one which came to my mind is quite a few times you have mentioned the four words which are a hindrance to knowledge is, I know it already, that one.
Three words, I know that.
I know that, okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I know that. So that one, and how we should be avoiding that. And the third thing that came to my mind was, once you had narrated how Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj had said that when he was asked, like, how are you able to continue this long in the movement, he said that I do the same things every day.
Yeah.
So again, the thing about keep it simple.
Yeah. Nice points. And it's true, too. I stay with Jayadvaita Maharaj every year at the Govardhan Ashram. And he's watching me. You know, he's there before Mangal Arati starts. He stays in the morning program. And he's just like a brahmachari, simple, you know, doesn't embellish things. He sits down and with class with everyone else. And you see that this is a very sustaining force over time. Yes, Lavanya.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I just wanted to add to what you were saying, as you were asking, with the loss of taste. And I was thinking about my personal experiences over the past few weeks. Initially, it used to be a taste that attracts you, because you're new to the whole thing. You need to fall off the horse a few times to realize that when you follow that taste, you lose this. And then you wake up and realize that your chanting is slipping, and you don't feel the attraction to run to the temple anymore, and things are going. So I was thinking that now, when I get association that earlier would have been wonderful, or I get to spend time doing things that I thought was very meaningful earlier, now I am scared of the same things that I used to enjoy. Because with that taste, I see behind it that loss of whatever spirituality I have gained. I recognize that to taste that, I must pay a price that I am no longer willing to pay. So the world feels a more dangerous place.
Yeah. Nice realizations. And this is a natural result of surrendering process. Bhakti parishanubhava viraktir anyatra means that naturally, as one eats food, one gets nourishment, satisfaction, and eradication of hunger.
So this eradication of hunger is compared to virakti, which means detachment from all things that are not connected to Krishna. And this is a sign that we can see in ourselves, just as when you're eating, no one, you don't need a certificate from another person. You don't have to call in an expert and say, okay, he's full now. She's okay. She doesn't need another plate. You can say for yourself, and you can see these things, that I'm no longer attracted to things that I was attracted before. And I like the point you made about being, there's a trepidation about even going to those, in that area, because you know that it can affect me, that the effect will be there, and I don't want to lose my edge in Krishna consciousness. Very subtle. And, you know, devotees are careful. They don't want to take intoxication because it will ruin their communion with Krishna and the holy name. It's very, you know, they're careful about these things, and they know Krishna, that they're developing a relationship with Krishna. Not just that I'm developing faith in Krishna, but he's developing faith in me. So there's this hesitancy to do anything that would jeopardize that, you know, one's relationship with Krishna. That, yes, nobody's looking, but oh, yes, Krishna's looking. And if I do this thing, then I may lose my standing with Krishna. But if I uphold it, then I come even closer. And this is the real wealth in life. Yeah. Yes.
Hare Krishna Guruji. I had a question.
Yes.
So many times we are put into situations which cause us some kind of an anxiety, cause us some anxieties. So my question is, and it is said that we are supposed to try to transcend them and take shelter of the Lord. In those situations.
Try to what? Transcend?
Transcend the situations.
Yes, okay.
So, how do we differentiate between actually trying to transcend or neglecting? The neglect part and the trying to transcend. So, what is the thin line of difference?
So, if I understand you correctly, your question is that in our daily life, there are situations that can cause us anxiety.
That's correct. Yeah.
And we're advised to transcend those activities or to neglect them?
No. So, Praji, it's like, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, that we should not get affected by the situations. So the difference between neglect and taking shelter of Krishna for that particular situation.
Can you give me an example of how that might happen in daily life and how you might come up against these two choices?
I'm not getting an example.
The difference between, what do you mean by neglecting?
So not acting on that situation, for example.
I see. But you're not actually feeling transcendental, but you're just leaving it because you have an intellectual understanding that you shouldn't touch it? Here, let's have an example from Gandharvika.
Maybe if I just get some low marks in exam or get a C, instead of speculating, I can tell that, oh, it's okay, I transcend the situation, I move on. But can I take that as a... Because maybe I could have gotten C because I didn't perform well. Or it could be that external circumstances, maybe the professor was really bad or something I did. But how do I weigh whether I should transcend for everything that happens in my life? Where can I say that I am responsible for that? So how do we say that, okay, leave it to Krishna and I take responsibility? It's a very thin line.
Well, as far as life goes, one must do one's best to maintain one's, preserve oneself, self-preservation. And if you do your best and you're not able to move forward in a certain way, you should understand that there are limitations and not be overcome with anxiety. That there are obstacles that come to everyone. I read to you the section from Preeti Maharaj, who wanted to perform 100 horse sacrifices. And at number 99, he had a little competition from Indra, who wanted to ruin the yajna so that he couldn't perform the 100th, because it would just would have been too painful for Indra to see somebody do as much as he did, or more. And Preeti Maharaj struggled with it for a little while. He wanted to kill Indra, in fact. And then he got wisdom, which helped him prevail over the situation, and he dropped it. And some of the advice was that there are events that come to us in this life that are not that are caused by destiny. And if we try to readjust them, then we'll enter into the darkest regions of anxiety, trying to readjust destiny and the way things are going. We can look at it again. So one should try to remain balanced. But the ultimate thrust in our life should be towards taking shelter of Krishna and becoming Krishna conscious. And if you make decisions based on that and how you'll ultimately be best situated in Krishna consciousness as you move through your life, then you won't go wrong. You have to have that point of reference that the most important aspect of your life is to become Krishna conscious. Dharma swanustita pumsam vishvakshena katasuya not pariyad yadiratim shrama evahi kevalam. If you do your work, if you do your duty in life, and you don't develop attraction for Krishna, then it's absolutely, positively, without doubt, shrama evahi kevalam. Evahi kevalam. It's useless labor. This is the opinion of the Bhagavat. And also, Shastra says that one should endeavor for that positive end, which brings one back to Godhead. Tasyaiva hetu prayate ta kovido na labhyate yad brahmatamu paryada. You can't get what you can't get by wandering everywhere within Silicon Valley and going to, you know, Oracle and Intel and Google and Apple and everywhere else. I mean, no matter how hard you try, there's only a certain, you have a certain limitation according to your past karma. The great botanist, what's his name? Garden named after him in Southern California. He used to breed, what's that? Luther Burbank, yeah. He was a great botanist, and he experimented with different strains of trees, you know, grafting trees and combining different kinds of strains, and he was trying to make a gigantic plum. How big can a plum get? And he realized after some time, he said, plums, no matter how much you genetically engineer the plant, they can only get so large, and they won't get any larger. And as a matter of fact, after you stop messing with them, they go back to their original state as well. Same with animals too. When you try to crossbreed animals and you make all these different species, after you leave them for a while, they'll revert back to where they were. And that's how karma is also. We have a certain built-in limitation. I realized this in my life. You know, when I was younger, I used to think, I can do anything. I really did. I really thought that. When I became a grihastha, you know, I started a business, and I really thought, you know, I'll just take this to the moon. I've been successful in everything else. And I ran into limitations and all kinds of, like, obstacles and everything, which was, when I look back, it was Krishna's mercy. Because, I remember thinking one day, it's like, you know, there's only so fast you can run in this world. There's only so high you can jump and so many things that you can do on that level. And that's what the verse says. Don't try for the things that have an automatic limitation on them in this world. But try for that ultimate end that has no limitation. If you try for Krishna consciousness, then nobody can stop you. And you can look at the story of Dhruva Maharaj, what he attained. I mean, there's no end to the attainment that you can get in Krishna consciousness. Your decisions in life must be tempered by this understanding. Otherwise, you're neglecting one thing, picking up another thing. It's a relative choice according to a particular time and circumstance, but it won't ultimately satisfy you or be productive in the overall scheme of your life. That was a long answer. Decide based on what's best for your Krishna consciousness, what to pick up and what to neglect. And you'll know for yourself if you're transcending something. It becomes self-apparent that you're transcendent. It's not something you have to speculate about, because, as I mentioned from the verse, bhakti parushanubhavu viraktir, there's a way in which when you eat food, you become satisfied and you don't want any more. Someone says, you want some more? Even if it's your favorite thing. You want another one? I don't want another one. Go, come on, take another one. I don't want another one. And similarly, when you become actually situated in Krishna consciousness, you know for yourself that you're no longer being pushed in a certain way. You can experience it. You see it directly. Bhakti parishanubhava means that you see directly for yourself that you're becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness. 266 in your shloka book. Please have a look. 266. Bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktir. Anyatra chaisha trika eka kala. Prapadyamanasya yatashnatasus. Tushti pushti shud payonugasam. Translation. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the same way as pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. And at certain times in your life when you can't decide what to neglect and what to pick up, you should take advice of higher authorities, people who you can understand are situated in a transcendental way. If you take that kind of advice as your ultimate guiding end when you can't decide, because somebody might say, should I be a grahastha, should I be a brahmachari, should I do this or that, and they can't decide, so they go and they ask somebody. Consult Krishna within your heart through prayer. Go to the most advanced people that you know, that you trust, and that's an invaluable kind of resource to have in your life, and consult Shastra. And through these three methods, you'll be able to move through life and make decisions. And if you make a lousy decision, it's not going to harm you either, because your ultimate goal is to become Krishna conscious. You'll learn from it. You can't trip and fall in Krishna consciousness, even if you run with your eyes closed. This is the statement of Kavi Yogendra at the outset of his teaching. He said, if you close your eyes and run in bhakti, you won't trip and fall, because it's the direct process of Krishna consciousness, and Krishna is there to catch you. Even if you do fall, you learn from it in such a way that you become stronger the next time. Okay? Now I don't even know where we are. We have a lot of books, though. I'm going to keep going on the story, because I feel like we have a little time left. We can hear a little bit more. Pardon me? No, I like collecting them. It's a sign of a productive evening. Lord Krishna continued, we had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. Simply by the grace of the spiritual master, a person can fulfill life's purpose and attain eternal peace. The Brahmana said, what could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords?
O universal teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled at the home of our spiritual master. That's Sudama speaking to Lord Krishna. Sudama Brahmana wisely understands his extraordinary good fortune of having lived with Sri Krishna at the residence of their spiritual master. Thus, whatever external difficulties they experienced were actually an expression of the Lord's mercy to teach the importance of service to the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada renders the learned Brahmana's feelings as follows. Sudama said, "My dear Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Spiritual Master of everyone. And since I was fortunate enough to live with you in the house of our Guru, I think I have nothing more to do in the matter of prescribed Vedic duties." Last verse in the chapter. O Almighty Lord, your body comprises the Absolute Truth in the form of the Vedas and is thus the source of all auspicious goals of life. That you took up residence at the school of a spiritual master is simply one of your pastimes in which you play the role of a human being. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 80th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Brahmana Sudama Visits Lord Krishna in Dwarka. Chapter 81, The Lord Blesses Sudama Brahman. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna ate a morsel of the flat rice brought by his friend Sudama and bestowed upon him wealth greater than that of the King of Heaven. In the course of his loving talks with his friend Sudama, Lord Krishna said, "My dear Brahmana, have you brought any gift for me from home? I regard as very significant even the smallest offering from my loving devotee." But the poor Brahmana was ashamed to present Krishna with his meager gift of flat rice. However, since Lord Krishna is the Supersoul dwelling in all hearts, he knew why Sudama had come to visit him. So he grabbed the bundle of flat rice Sudama was hiding and ate a handful of it with great pleasure. He was about to eat a second morsel when Rukmini Devi stopped him. Feeling as if he had gone back to Godhead, Sudama spent that night comfortably in Lord Krishna's palace, and the next morning he set off for home. As he passed along the highway, he thought of how fortunate he was to have been so honored by Sri Krishna. Absorbed in this meditation, Sudama arrived at the place where his home used to be, and he was struck with great wonder. Instead of his broken-down hovel, he saw a series of opulent palaces. While he stood astonished, a group of beautiful men and women came forward to greet him with singing and music. The Brahmana's wife, wonderfully adorned with celestial jewelry, came out of the palace and welcomed him with love and reverence. Sudama entered his home together with her, thinking that this extraordinary transformation must have been due to the Supreme Lord's mercy on him. From then on, Sudama lived his life amidst lavish wealth, yet he maintained his mood of detachment and constantly chanted the glories of Lord Krishna. In a short time, he broke off all bonds of bodily attachment and attained to the kingdom of God. Text 1 and 2. Shukadev Goswami said, "Lord Hari, Krishna, perfectly knows the hearts of all living beings and is especially devoted to the Brahmanas. While the Supreme Lord, the goal of all saintly persons, conversed in this way with the best of the twice-born, he laughed and spoke the following words to that dear friend of his, the Brahmana Sudama, all the while smiling and looking upon him with affection." Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, and we're so fortunate to have the words of Srila Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This is the power of the parampara. We hear from these great souls, and we can just take shelter of their words and understand. Gandharvika?
So, Prabhuji, maybe this is a stupid question, but...
We give $100 for each stupid question, but let me see if I have 100 with me. Okay, go ahead.
No, we just read that sentence where Prabhupada, in the summary, it is said that when he went, the place was palace. So when people read this, they say that, like, how we met the other person, fantasy or something like that, or where is the proof that it's happening today? So how do we understand that? And second question is, does Krishna do this, like even today, these kind of pastimes happen, or because we are so fallen, we cannot realize that. How do we take it?
The second question was what? How do we take?
First question is, how do we understand that in the real sense?
Well, first of all, let's take one time at thing at a time. How do you understand anything, for that matter? I mean, how do you understand? What evidence do you take for, you know, your existence? How do you know? Prove you exist. Can you prove that?
By the symptoms.
Huh?
By the symptoms of life.
But you can prove that, right?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I breathe. Means through comparison, we try to, based on the knowledge that we gain, we try to prove it, that as a basis.
Yeah. So my point is that any argument that you make ultimately has no end. There's no, it's always based on some assumption. Every argument that you make is based on some assumption. And there are various ways of getting knowledge of the world and of oneself. And by examining the various methods for getting knowledge, one can understand that there are limitations on those which depend on one's own senses and mind. However, by hearing from a superior source, which is infallible, one can get perfect knowledge. This is the basic premise of how one can understand the Vedic literature. One must accept them as a purusheya, or beyond the defects of the limited senses of a human being. They're eternal, they're co-eternal with the Lord, and they're perfect. So this is the method for understanding the spiritual world, which is beyond our perception. And there is no access to understanding things which are inconceivable through the senses. We have to accept them from a higher source. We also have to accept them in a mood of service and humility. And when we try to extract knowledge, as I was saying the other night, the scientific method is that we will extract from the material nature the truth. We'll wring it out of her. One way or another, you're going to give it up. But meanwhile, such persons are being conquered by the material nature. And even they're doing it for posterity's sake. They won't be there to appreciate it later on. So the Vedic process is amanidvam, adamvidvam, through humility and pridelessness, to understand that there's a higher power and that he can reveal himself to me, and that there's a channel through which he does that. So this is the method for understanding, you know, Krishna's pastimes. And those who enter into that process, and we could also argue that that's scientific, because if you take that as a way of life and you follow the prescription, then you'll see for yourself. And what was the second point?
The second point is like how we read in the scriptures, like so many pastimes happen, but it's not over a period of time, it's sudden, like how Sudama went back and the houses were there. And we also read like how when Krishna entered into the ocean, then everything became sweet when he in Dwaraka. Mm-hmm. So like that, does things like that happen? Like it, there is no time, like it just happened immediately. So does it happen even today? Because, or as you said, because we don't have that inconceivable attitude.
Well, when Krishna is present performing his pastimes, there are according to the acharyas, there's an abundance of these kinds of occurrences because of his presence here. And his particular presence on the planet was noted by Queen Kunti when she said, "If you, when you go away, everything's going to, you know, revert back to the way it was."
So there is a way in which when Krishna comes and performs his personal pastimes, there's a great show. It's a big road show that comes to town, and he puts it on. Ananda chinmaya rasat matayamanasu ya praninam pratipalam smadutam upetya lilayitena bhuvanani jayat yajastram govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Does it on purpose to capture the minds of the living entities through his unlimitedly inconceivable pastimes. You know, that's why he comes, to put on this big show. So one can hear about these things and marvel in them, but the basic premise again is that one must accept that God has inconceivable potencies. That's the meaning of God. Otherwise, there's no meaning. He can do anything. He can turn the ocean into nectar. He can lift a hill with his little finger. But that's nothing, actually. If you look at material nature, how things are being sustained, I take it for granted that I'm just floating in the air on this little speck of dust in the universe. How's it all going on? Prabhupada used to tell the story about the Narada going to Vaikuntha, and he meets a cobbler and he meets a puffed-up Brahmin. And they both say, find out what the Lord's doing when you go there. And then he comes back and he tells them what Lord Narayan told him, that he's threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And then the Brahmana protests and says, that's impossible, and so forth. And then he tells the simple Brahmanan that the simple cobbler that he was putting through the eye of a needle. And he said, oh, that's so wonderful. So, will you believe that? He said, yes, because he puts the banyan tree inside the seed. And how is that possible? Inconceivable potency. Yes, Srivas Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada came to West like Sudama Brahman, having nothing. And he just had Srimad Bhagavatam with him. And they were not even perfectly composed. But Krishna's mercy, we have so many palaces.
Touché. Yeah, that's a fact. That is a miracle. But interestingly, even in modern times, if someone sees something that's miraculous, it depends on their frame of reference. They may just say, oh, you know, that can't be. That's just a hoax or whatever it is. And it may be a hoax, but they're predisposed to a certain way of looking at the world, and therefore they take it like that. And Einstein said, you can either see everything as explainable or everything as a miracle. You know? Yes, Lavanya.
Guru Maharaj, since you picked up the topic, there was a thought in my mind about Srila Prabhupada that I wanted to clarify. Yes, Krishna's his powers are inconceivable. So his inconceivable potency explains almost everything about Krishna, because we cannot understand him. But when it comes to a guru, the response of a shishya to a guru seems to have a lot of the same qualities, similar qualities. They're not the same. But the shishya feels as if the guru has inconceivable capacity. And in their personal experiences, their experiences sound just as ununderstandable as sometimes Krishna's behavior is to us. So can you explain why that happens with a guru and a shishya, and what is the nature of that relationship?
It's just a special arrangement by Krishna for, the guru is a guru tattva is an interesting topic. Said Shiva tattva and guru tattva are two of the most complicated of tattvas to talk about in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. But guru tattva specifically, in a localized way, Krishna makes himself available through a person. And the guru is an agent or a channel. So one person might experience that from his or her Guru Maharaj, and another person might just think, oh, that's an ordinary person. But there's a way in which there's a transmission of that Divya Gyanam, divine knowledge and inspiration that's actually coming from Krishna. But that's, as we're reading here, Krishna himself, that's his process. He sends out his agents. As I mentioned before, there are some companies that don't sell directly. they you call up the company and say, you know, I need a case of soap, you know, and they'll say, you got to get from our agent. He's in Burlingame. You call him up, and then, you know, it's just, you know, you got to get it to the agent. So Krishna's like that too. He delves out his knowledge and so forth through his agencies. And now we've come to the end. It goes so quick, you know, and other times we might this year have some sangha we can just hear and chant all day long. We'll help pick some Ekadashis or some special days and call in sick. And we'll all come in here and we'll just hear and chant all day long. What do you think? Why not? And anyway, so tomorrow we can be inspired for taking shelter of the Lord's holy names and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Even if you're in a hurry, whatever, carve out that time so you have that very focused time to be present with the holy name and with Prabhupada's books, because that's our sustaining force. And we'll go on with this pastime on Saturday, continue the Sudama Brahman pastime. There's a lot of intricacies in the philosophy, some of the questions that may be answered, like, why was he so poor if he was taking shelter of Krishna and so forth? That's answered coming up. So tune in Saturday morning. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Aribol. Sudama Brahman Ki Jai. Lord Krishna Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. And now we'll put away all the books and asanas as efficiently, quickly, and reverentially as possible. And then we'll stand up for the Artik ceremony. Hare Krishna. Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday night extravaganza. And we're so happy to have this temple and the association of the devotees here at the, huddled at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and the direction of his books and the teachings of the acharyas coming down through parampara and what to speak of prasadam, which is really the main attraction everywhere we go in the world. If you serve prasadam, people will come and they'll become advanced in Krishna consciousness. Simple process, chanting, taking prasadam, and associating with devotees. Everything happens in natural course after that. And to have a Wednesday night program is special also, because usually the work week is quite rigorous, and to have something in the middle is a crossover to the weekend. So we've been going on like this for a long time at ISV with a program on Wednesday night and Saturday morning and Sunday afternoon. And then, of course, whenever festivals come, we build it up in a big way. And following the basic premise that of the 64 items of devotional service, 5 are particularly potent, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Worshipping the deity, chanting Hare Krishna, living in the holy Dham, associating with the devotees. Even if one doesn't have faith in these things but has connection to them, even a little connection, then one will make advancement in devotional service. And we see that everyone who's coming to ISV who is keeping connection with these 5 is making advancement in devotional service. So we welcome everyone who's come here tonight. Thank you very much. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.